drunk. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
It is a battle of relevancy here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, considering that we led off with the Ravens last week and even had the Terps in second, followed by third in the Baltimore Orioles. This week, it's a little bit flip-flopped here. All of a sudden, nobody's in their respective positions now. All of a sudden, the Orioles are now going to be talked about first here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Why is that? Because they had a better week.
Yeah, I mean, given the fact that the Ravens-Broncos game was anything but an offensive battle like me and Ray predicted, I mean, look at it this way. Joe Flacco and Peyton Manning both threw touchdowns.
Yeah, we're wrong, though. We were wrong. We were supposed to, it was going to be an offensive slugfest.
You missed a cue there. You were supposed to say to the other defenses.
Yeah, they did, too, as well.
This is why we're not a comedic duo, of course.
Although I will say this, though. Marcus Mariota threw his first touchdown pass to a Tennessee Titan. Jameis Winston also threw his first touchdown pass to a Tennessee Titan.
And I believe Alex Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs threw for three touchdown passes, none of which to a wide receiver, so that drought is still continuing for that franchise. But what's even bigger news, of course, in Baltimore Sports Talk this week, unfortunately, is the loss of Terrell Suggs for the season with an Achilles injury. Thankfully, it's not the same Achilles that he injured back in 2012, but unfortunately,
it's another one.
Yeah, when you're 33 years old and you're entering your, 14th, 15th year in the league, and you're getting near that, getting near the end of it all.
The twilight.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody talks about, well, it's not the same Achilles that he injured a couple of years ago. Well, they said the same thing about RG3. Oh, it's not the same knee he injured so many years ago in college. It's still not good.
Yeah, I mean, 13th season this year for Terrell Suggs. And what's even worse was he played the majority of the game. Of course, in the fourth quarter was when we saw him get carted off the field. And, of course, when you see the carts loading up somebody, whether it be a former defensive player of the year like Terrell Suggs or a sideline judge, which, by the way, when you read that on paper, sounds really terrible. 6 broken ribs, bruised collarbone. Yikes.
Wow.
Bad day for that guy.
Was he refereeing high school football in Texas?
No, not that guy. Not that guy, no. This was the guy in the Broncos-Ravens game.
Yeah. I was making
first injury of the game, though.
I was making a funny.
I know you were making a funny, but there's nothing funny about a guy getting sidelined.
Well, are funny because we are the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All on sfmsports.net and Audio Boom, Stitcher, and Spreaker. Our Facebook page is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Podcast, and our Twitter, at BSportsFree, #4all. You can check us out on Sports Blog.
Yep, getting a little lackadaisical on the Sports Blog, hoping to get something up this week. I know I've been saying that for weeks now, but
should I even promo this thing until you actually put something up?
I promise something will be up soon. Something will be up soon.
All right, well, talking about soon, it's the Baltimore Orioles we are talking about this week.
Yep, that's right. 19 games left to go in the regular season, and surprisingly, mathematically, as long as they're still fighting for a playoff spot and they're still in contention, I'm looking at the wild card standings right now in the American League. The Orioles are still 6 games back of the Texas Rangers for the second wild card spot. But at the same time, Ray, when you look at everything else going on, the Orioles are playing a lot better than they had in weeks past. I mean, right now the record stands at 70-73. And, of course, in the American League East, they're third in the American League East ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays and the Boston Red Sox, which ain't saying a whole lot because right now a game or two can determine third and fifth place. First and second place are pretty much notched up between the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees. But, yeah, the Orioles mathematically are still in this thing. And surprising as it may be, if they continue to play the way they've had against recently the New York Yankees and the Kansas City Royals, a huge Kansas City Royals series win this week, they may make things interesting in the playoff spot. But would you say that What percentage would you say right now the Orioles have a shot of even coming close to the second wild card?
15%.
15?
I would say that's a healthy number.
While mathematically still in contention.
Yes, but odds are not in your favor. But at the same time, I was also told as a couple years ago to disregard some stats in certain situations because those are those guys. Those are you. I mean, if you make it, then what do those stats prove? Nothing. So prove them wrong, kids. Prove them wrong.
And proving them wrong were the Baltimore Orioles this week, as far as the skeptics were concerned. Monday, September 7th, they started a three-game series against the New York Yankees. Of course, this was the Labor Day matchup. Orioles losing 8-6. We covered this beforehand. Wilson was your winner, 5-0. Rondon, the loser at 0-1. Andrew Miller collecting his 32nd save. Moving on to Tuesday and Wednesday. On Tuesday, September the 8th, Orioles went 2-1. Darren O'Day was your winner, improving to 6-2. Shreve, the loser, going to 6-2. Britton collecting his 31st save of the season. Wednesday, September the 9th, the Orioles win 5-3, winning their first series in what seems like forever against the New York Yankees, winning 5-3. Good Ubaldo Jimenez improves to 11-9. Warren, the loser, at 6-6. Zach Britton collecting his 32nd save of the season. So, hey, there you have it. Another series win for the Orioles, which was a rare sight. Can they pull off two in a row? Well, that's where Kansas City comes to town. On Friday, September 11th, the Orioles were competing against the Kansas City Royals, winning 14-8. Michael Gibbons was your winner at 2-0. Herrera to lose at 4-3.
This was one of those games where you would think Oriole magic was in play here because you had two grand slams and one inning, and that was
and one angry Chris Davis
Hulk smash and everything else going on. Buck Showalter gets ejected. It just seems like this was one of those games that you just love to watch with the Baltimore Orioles, and it had to come here late in the season when you think the team was coming under fire for not having enough spark, so to speak. But lo and behold, they still have a little bit of spark left here as long as the season still plays out, especially Chris Davis, because of he's playing for his money. He's playing for his contract in this contract year. He's up to, what, 43 home runs now?
Looking at the stat line right now for Chris Davis, last time I checked, he had 42. As of this podcast, he's had 42 home runs this season. Now, if everything comes out correct, I'm checking out Chris Davis right now. Yep, 263 batting average, 42 home runs, 106 RBIs. If the Orioles were in contention right now, Ray, those are MVP numbers right there.
Those are well MVP numbers for Chris Davis and everything else going on. He's competing with Nelson Cruz, who unfortunately is also on a team
whose numbers are being wasted.
Yeah, that's who's also on a team that is not competing like whatsoever. They were out of it like pretty much from the first month of baseball. So with that, the Orioles at least remain in contention all the way until mid-August.
Or maybe in this case, at least for another week until something drastic happens. Saturday, September the 12th, unfortunately, the Orioles' three-game winning streak was halted by a 14-6 loss, which was just wasted on an undependable bullpen by the Orioles. Ventura was your winner, improving to 11-8. Mattis, the loser, going to 1-4. Brian Mattis, who I don't understand the Orioles putting in this situation because he should only get lefties out. He shouldn't be put in these situations where the starting pitching can't go long enough. That's why you have Brad Brock. That's why you have Chaz Rowe. That's why you have TJ McFarland, those long relief guys. You don't put in Brian Mattis in that situation because you're just asking for a match in a you're asking to light a match in a gasoline tank right there.
Yeah, with Brian Mattis, everything that's been going wrong for the guy has gone wrong. And the guy, every time you see him come up on the mound, you're just saying, "Oh man, here we go again. Don't do this. Don't do this now. Not again." And then everything happens, and then he blows up in his face. Luckily, on Monday night, that didn't happen with Brian Mattis. That was kind of the Brian Mattis of old that we've seen in the bullpen. And maybe the guy can somewhat get his form back because the Orioles keep bringing him out there to talk and bring out in the bullpen. But I guess they don't want to give up on him just yet.
Well, before we get to Monday night, speaking of Sunday night, September the 13th, the Orioles had an ESPN Sunday Night Baseball game against the Kansas City Royals, hoping to get their second straight series win, winning 8-2. Wei-Yan Chen was your winner, improving to 9-7. Johnny Cueto, man, ever since 2-6, the loser, Johnny Cueto. Talking about a trade that's backfiring you and at the wrong time. I mean, if you're at a Kansas City Royals, the probability of you going to a World Series, especially if this guy's in your starting rotation, not good. not good at all. So definitely a bad investment there so far. And Monday, September the 14th, the Orioles lose. They win 2-0 against the Boston Red Sox.
Wow, you're kind of used to saying that since mid-August.
I know, it's terrible.
Since that twin series that you're saying to yourself, huh, well, this team is guaranteed to lose. But, Josh, that's why we're talking about them first. We're not talking about the Ravens first. We're not talking about the Terps first. We're talking about the Baltimore Orioles first because they had a good week this week.
2-0 victory over the Boston Red Sox. Kevin Gausman was your winner, improving to 3-6. Rodriguez, the loser, at 9-6. Britton collecting his 33rd save of the season. And this is what we talked about on the last episode of the free-for-all. Well, at the end of the free-for-all, we were saying, I would be happy if we went 5-2. Well, guess what, Ray? They went 5-2 this past week.
So we are very happy, and that's why we're happy to bring them to you first.
Yeah, so looking at the stat sheet and who did good this week for the Baltimore Orioles, I guess you could say it's safe to say that the offensive stats were the highlights for the Orioles so far this week. Looking at the week in review and looking at the last 7 days, Chris Davis was your top hitter in the last 7 days, hitting .444, 8 out of 18, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 5 runs batted in, and just looking to collect that paycheck. I mean, as an optimist, you hope that the Orioles can re-sign Chris Davis, but if you're a pessimist, you're just still standing still like, nope, ain't happening. I've seen this 8 million times.
They're going to let 2 consecutive 40 home run hitters go.
Yeah, you're hoping that the front office doesn't make that same mistake twice, especially if Chris Davis is the only player in Orioles history, and this was stat-checked, the only player in Orioles history to have 2 separate 40 home run seasons. Nobody else in Orioles history has done that. Not Eddie Murray, not Rafael Palmeiro.
Not Frank Robinson.
Not Frank Robinson. Nobody. Just Chris Davis.
Yeah, and then especially if you let him go and you don't replace him with anybody else and you get you replace him with garbage and they end up getting designated for assignment like a Travis Snyder, like a David Lowe, like a Bud Norris, like a whole bunch of other players that they brought up that just turned out to be nothing. And then everything happens, you're thinking to yourself, well, why were they trying to save this money when this is what they were trying to pick up? I'm not convinced that that was the reason why you didn't sign Nelson Cruz.
Looking at other Orioles players that did great offensively, Jonathan Schoop had a solid week. 9-for-25, 1 double, 4 runs scored, 2 home runs, 2 runs batted in. So it was nice to see the young second baseman doing good with that .360 batting clip. Adam Jones also belted 2 home runs. 9 RBIs driven in by Mr. Jones this week with a .353 batting clip. So I guess better late than never for number 10 center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles, right?
Maybe.
I know. We still got a long ways to go. 19 games left to play. Steve Clevinger hitting .333. Ryan Flaherty hitting .333. Jimmy Paredes, .333.
When was the last time we saw that? Like what, early June?
Nolan Reimel, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs this week with a .304 batting clip. When was the last time we saw that?
Have we ever seen that from Nolan Reimel?
This was a positive, though. Young rookie Daryl Alvarez going 2-for-7 with his first major league home run this week. So that's definitely a positive to look at if you are an Orioles fan looking into the future more so than the postseason at this point. Now, looking at the best pitching as far as pitching is concerned, once again, Wei-Yin Chen having a solid week, getting a victory with a 2.57 earned run average. Kevin Gausman picking up a victory as a starter, and actually in 2 previous starts had 11 innings pitch, only gave up 1 earned run in those 11 innings. So I know Kevin Gausman has had a rough go as of late as a starting pitcher, but this is sort of the trend you want to see, 1 earned run in 11 innings pitched, and hopefully this is a trend we can see from Kevin Gausman moving forward, because you happen to think that if Wei-Yin Chen does not come back to the Orioles next season, Kevin Gausman is definitely going to be top 3 in that Orioles rotation next year.
Given everything that's been going on with Gonzalez, given everything that's been going on with Tillman this year, you would hope that Kevin Gausman would be able to turn it around and actually be a guy that could be a solid guy in the lineup, considering that you've got 2 other guys next year that you would hope would be ready for the majors, given that they're not injury-prone.
Yeah, and pitcher of the week, though, is Zach Britton. In 4 games, he's had 3 saves out of 3 save opportunities, 4 scoreless innings, 5 strikeouts, 0 walks. And like I said last week, where Zach Britton had, what, two scoreless innings total last week, and we said that was wasted on the young man because he should be out there collecting saves. Well, collecting three saves, especially in the month of September, certainly helps, especially in a week in September, certainly helps.
He's got more saves than Andrew Miller.
That is very true. That is definitely true indeed. Worst pitching performance so far really has been the Orioles' bullpen. Brian Mattis in three appearances, a 13.50 earned run average. TJ McFarland in two games, 16.87 earned run average. Michael Givens, even though he picked up a victory, he's had an 18 ERA in one game appearance. And Stevie Johnson, who was a big highlight for the Orioles in 2012 as a rookie pitcher, 27 earned run average in one appearance. So, you know, you look at the starting pitching, Ubaldo, Wei-Yan Chen, Kevin Gausman all had solid weeks. Tillman, not so much, 6.75 earned run average. Bullpen, other than Darren O'Day and Zach Britton, have been just completely awful. And you hope that this isn't a trend that we see if the Orioles are at least, at the very least, looking to get their fourth straight winning season, and just hope to end the season on a high note. Is it possible that they can get the second wild card? Maybe, maybe not. But as an Orioles fan that has invested in this team for a long time, you at least hope that they try to get that fourth winning season. All right, moving on to next week, Ray. What do you think?
5-2.
You want to say 5-2 again?
Oh yeah.
You're being really selfish right now.
How about this? 7-0.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free for All.
Week one of NFL action is in the books, and we've seen many upsets, many injuries, unfortunately one of them being the Baltimore Ravens, and many unexpected scorers, so to speak.
It was a weird week in week one, considering that there was a lot of special teams that were, there were errors all around for special teams. You can even look at the Washington Redskins and their game that they had against the Miami Dolphins and that late punt return that they allowed for them, and they seemed like they were getting a break throughout the entire game, and yet they could not take advantage of it. Then you look at the Ravens and Broncos game and just everything that was going on right there. Like I said, I was predicting an offensive slugfest.
As was everybody else.
Yeah, but unfortunately it didn't happen, and what ended up happening is Peyton Manning only was held to like 175 passing yards and two interceptions, and the Ravens still could not beat the Peyton Manning-led Broncos because ultimately Joe Flacco also threw two interceptions, and it was kind of a sloppy game on offense altogether. You look at some of the stats, and it's just nothing's going to set your world on fire. Even the running game with Justin Forsett was a game that I thought he could have done better, and unfortunately it didn't pan out there for the Baltimore Ravens, and they ended up on the short end of the stick, losing 19-13, and also ended up losing their star linebacker in Terrell Suggs. Now, granted, Terrell Suggs is not the player that he used to be. He's not even not really where he should be. So a lot of people are kind of writing this off as not that big of a loss, but I think it is a huge loss considering his presence in the locker room and his presence on the field that he gives. Yeah, he was getting a lot of advantages from the double teams that were being put on. That was the other linebacker, blanking on his name right now.
C.J. Mosley.
Not C.J. Mosley, but the one they got from Denver. Okay, I'm
blanking
on his name right now.
It's so terrible.
What is going on? It's like tongue.
Elvis Dumervil.
There we go. I almost said Von Miller.
We got to get into football mode.
I'm like, wait a minute. I almost said Von Miller, but wait, Von Miller? No, that's not Von Miller.
Von Miller was on the opposite end.
Yeah, it's Elvis Dumervil. Yes, because Elvis Dumervil used to be on the Broncos, and I was thinking about that until they had a fax machine snafu, and I all of a sudden had a brain snafu. So I think my brain came from the same manufacturer as Elvis Dumervil's fax machine. So with that given, yeah, Terrell Suggs was benefiting a lot from Elvis Dumervil on the opposite side there. But at the same time, you're losing a presence on the field and you're losing a presence in the locker room. Yes, Terrell Suggs is still going to be in the locker room, but he's going to be on crutches.
Yeah, and that certainly isn't a place you want to see number 55 right there. Looking at this game, the 19-13 loss to the Denver Broncos, I will say this firsthand. I do think people need to write this off as a, well, I'm not shocked that this is a loss. I would have been more shocked if it was a victory because, let me tell you, if there has been any other place that was tougher than playing in Baltimore on the road, than playing in Pittsburgh on the road, New England on the road, Denver is definitely in the top five because in the last three seasons, going into the fourth season now, Peyton Manning and company have been nearly unstoppable in Mile High. And looking at the defense, and you, first of all, big credit out there to the Wade Phillips-led Denver Broncos on defense, because you look at Von Miller, you look at cornerback Aqib Talib, who returned a 51-yard interception return for a touchdown, and you also look at Darian Stewart, former Raven, got an interception as well. It was DeMarcus Ware, too. You look at the Denver Broncos on paper, it doesn't look impressive until you see him on the field and see the presence that Wade Phillips has on that team. It is remarkable. It is remarkable watching it on television, because you could tell the Ravens offense had no answers for the Broncos defensive line. They had no answers for their secondary. They had no answers at all, really. And that pretty much was the key to the game right there. You look at the Ravens offensive line, when Eugene Monroe went out of the game for a concussion, it just completely collapsed there for Joe Flacco and company.
It collapsed completely, and all of a sudden everybody was saying to themselves, oh, well, this is kind of a game you just want to throw away, but it's only week one. You don't know what you're going to be getting yourself into in terms of the football season. But one thing that I couldn't help but notice, Josh, is that Joe Flacco had himself a bad game, but you know who had himself a good game?
Tyrod Taylor.
In Buffalo.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, and we're just waiting for the phone calls. We should have kept Tyrod Taylor. Look, I get it, okay? Tyrod Taylor probably won your fantasy week. Congratulations. But until the guy can lead the Buffalo Bills to their first Super Bowl ever and become Super Bowl MVP, give me a call.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm still holding my breath.
Are we going to mark this? Are we going to mark this on the week of September 13th through the 20th for the Baltimore Sports Free For All, as Josh Hall in minute 20 says that if the Bills, led by Tyrod Taylor, go to the Super Bowl 50, can you believe if that would happen? What would be going on? I would be loving to listening to Baltimore Sports Radio right now. Even though when I worked in Baltimore Sports Radio for the longest time, I was very annoyed by the Tyrod Taylor calls.
And the Troy Smith calls.
And the Troy Smith calls. But Josh, he won a Heisman.
Yeah, and Tyrod Taylor played at Virginia Tech. And
Joe Flacco played at Delaware.
But at the same time, though, it's great on Tyrod Taylor that he got a victory in Buffalo, especially against – how do you think the Indianapolis Colts feel after that loss?
They're like, oh, boy, wow.
They're like, wow, we'll never hear the end of this.
We're never going to hear the end of this. We lost, and we got our butts handed to us by the Buffalo Bills, of all people. I mean, the Bills, given the fact that they've always been kind of the franchise that people would just be looking at as, oh, it's mediocrity or below mediocrity. They were put in the same category as the Detroit Lions, the Cincinnati Bengals of the 90s, so to speak. And with them to defeat the Indianapolis Colts, led by the future in Andrew Luck, that so much that Jim Irsay, good grief, I'm still thinking that he's alive. What is wrong with my brain today?
What's wrong with your fax machine up there?
Okay, so Jim Irsay getting rid of Peyton Manning for the future in Andrew Luck. All of a sudden now, maybe they're hitting the panic button in Indianapolis, considering that they lost to the Buffalo Bills, possibly.
How do you think Dallas feels after losing Dez Bryant for 4 weeks? You don't think Dallas is going to miss them? Think again. How do you think Seattle feels, knowing that Cam Chancellor is still sitting out for a contract?
Good
that secondary is going to be suffering.
Yeah, I mean, they had to bring in a rookie for instead of Cam Chancellor for a holdout. You're holding out all the way into the regular season. That's something that always baffled me.
So, Ravens fans, listen, it could be a lot worse. It could be a lot worse.
But it also could be better.
It could be better, definitely. And when you look at the offensive numbers, it certainly could be better. I mean, I'm still baffled when I look at the line for Joe Flacco. 18 for 32, 117 yards, 2 interceptions, got sacked twice, and had a 38.2 QB rating.
Josh, that's not elite.
That is not elite. It definitely isn't elite. And when your leading receiver is Marlon Brown, 2 catches for 25 yards, you know what that says about your receiving core? That says that you are in need of getting acquainted. And that was a big key for the Baltimore Ravens.
Should they have played catch in his backyard?
They probably should have played catch in the backyard during July at a barbecue. They probably should have done that. The running game couldn't get anything done. 73 total rushing yards by both Justin Forsett and Javorius Allen combined. Both of them averaging a little bit over 3 yards a carry. Justin Forsett had a big carry for 20 yards, but that was pretty much all the chunk of yardage he could get as far as his 43 yards were concerned. Receiving-wise, Marlon Brown had 2 catches for 25 yards. Crockett Gilmore, 2 catches for 23 yards, and almost at the end of the fourth quarter, hauled in a touchdown pass until a couple Broncos players knocked it out and got intercepted by Darian Stewart. And I said this a bunch of times the other day, and I stress it completely. I know it's unfair to put in the, well, if Jimmy Graham was there, if Rob Gronkowski was there. No, I'll go on better. If that was Dennis Pitta, that would have been a touchdown. He would have hauled that in, and he would have won the game. Crockett Gilmore is not familiar with those situations. He still has to get acquainted with Joe Flacco.
If that was Todd Heap, it would have been a touchdown.
Yeah. Crockett Gilmore has to get acquainted with Joe Flacco. Max Williams has to get acquainted with Joe Flacco. Michael Campanaro, Kamar Aiken. Marlon Brown has to get reacquainted with Joe Flacco after having a solid 2013 rookie season. And those are big questions going in. I'll tell you the one questions that don't lie with the Ravens right now is their defense. Their defense and their special teams. Those, I mean, if you have to give a game ball to the loser in this game, you have to give a little medal, a little ribbon, it's the Ravens defense, the kicker, and the punter. That pretty much was their game right there, and those were the only units that were solid. I mean, you look at the Ravens defense, Jimmy Smith had eight, he was your leading tackle getter with 8 tackles, also got an interception return for a touchdown. Defensive lineman Brandon Williams had 7 total tackles. C.J. Mosley had 6 tackles and 2 sacks right there, and a pass defense, and 2 QB hits to add to that. So I don't want to say that, you know, C.J. Mosley shouldn't be your lead pass rusher, but with Terrell Suggs out, it looks like he's going to have to be, especially if he's that familiar.
It's going to be next man up for the Baltimore Ravens, and next man up is next week for week 2 of the NFL season, and all of a sudden it's already here.
Yeah, so looking at week 2, they will be traveling to Oakland once again. Yep, Ravens are still on the West Coast. Taking on the Oakland Raiders, who came off a disappointing defeat against the Cincinnati Bengals in their home opener, and unfortunately will be without quarterback Derek Carr, who had to make the mistake of doing a stiff arm and injuring his throwing arm there.
Yeah, especially on Adam Pac-Man Jones, who was fresh off of his helmet hit, or lack thereof, considering he took the guy's helmet off and slammed his head up against the helmet. Was not suspended, was not ejected, but he was fined for that play, even though he's kind of a repeat offender when it comes to things like that. And everything else going on with Pac-Man, how this guy's still in the league, baffles me. But at the same time, though, yes, Derek Carr, you shouldn't have run up for the stiff arm on one Pac-Man Jones is running at you full speed. You're not Marshawn Lynch, okay? You're not even Trent Richardson.
Yeah, I would have said that it was a rookie mistake, but apparently, Ray, it's a second-year player mistake.
It's a sophomore mistake.
It's a sophomore mistake. Looking at the Oakland Raiders and their stats so far this season, I know it's only one game. Calm down, people. Mac McGloin is your leading passer with 142 yards, has 2 touchdowns and an interception. Actually, almost as many passing yards as Peyton Manning, who just did not look like the same guy he was years ago, just throwing those soft passes there and just not being able to, you know, get off any of the deep throws. So Matt McGloin, unfortunately for the Ravens, may have a stronger arm in this game. Latavius Murray is their leading rusher, averaging 4 yards a carry with 44 yards total. Receiver Amari Cooper had 5 catches for 47 yards. He's their leading scorer. He's their leading receiver so far. Their leading scorer is actually one Marcel Reese, who had 3 catches, 26 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And Marcel Reese is number 45, the fullback on your programs there, in entering his 6th season in the National Football League. So I don't know if the Ravens are going to be gunning for Marcel Reese to start week 2, but it is certain that he may play a big role for the Oakland Raiders in their playbook coming up against the Baltimore Ravens. Now, defensively, not really a whole lot to write home about. There are no sacks recorded for the Oakland Raiders, no interceptions, no forced fumbles. Pretty much their only weapon so far has been Matt McGloin, who will probably be starting this Sunday against the Oakland, Oakland Raiders. He's starting against his own team.
He's starting against his own team.
He might as well start against.
He could be Jameis Winston and probably throw a touchdown for the other team.
Yeah, just like Joe Flacco and Peyton Manning did this past week. So looking at week 2, Ray, looking at what needs to be done for the Baltimore Ravens as well as the Oakland Raiders, because you certainly don't want to start off 0-2 at home. Tell me how this game is going to pan out for the Birds of Baltimore.
Matt McGloin has a surprise game.
So he will be more of a challenge to the Baltimore Ravens than Peyton Manning was.
Yes, he will be more of a challenge to the Baltimore Ravens than Peyton Manning was. He'll have over 250 yards passing. I think he has at least two touchdowns. And I think the Raiders win this game 27-24.
Wow. Okay, so you have the Ravens scoring more points than the previous week, but you don't see Oakland going 0-2 to start the season.
No, I don't, because it's just this kind of these games that it seems like...
Early trap game?
Yeah, early trap game, and it just seems like there could be some weird things going on in Baltimore this year for the Ravens.
Okay, I will say this. I know that there's a cardinal rule that you shouldn't start off 0-2 to at home to start the NFL season. Frankly, going 0-2 doesn't necessarily damn you, because we've seen many teams start off 0-2 and make the postseason with 10 or more wins, or at least 9 wins, making it as a wild card. I think the Baltimore Ravens need to win this game, because you know who shows up week 3 at home in your home opener at M&T Bank Stadium? The current AFC North leader, Cincinnati Bengals, a team that the Ravens have had trouble with in the last two seasons. So this is a win. This is a must-win for the Baltimore Ravens. Do I think it is going to be, you know, do I think the game's not even going to be close? Absolutely not. I think this game is going to be very close. I think it's going to be uncomfortable. However, I do think that Joe Flacco has played this game long enough to right the ship in times that matter the most, and I feel like at the end of the game, he will get the game winning score, or he'll at least set up the game winning score. I have the Ravens winning this game 27-26. So, on to Oakland?
On to Oakland.
The Baltimore Sports Free for All.
Last but certainly least is the Maryland Terrapins and their performance that they had against Bowling Green this past Saturday. Oh boy, yeah, you come off of that win against Richmond, everybody's all fired up, everybody's saying, all right, here's another season of Maryland Terrapin football. Not going to be high bowl bound, but hopefully a bowl game, and then you go up against Bowling Green. Not so good.
Yeah. When you look at the game against Richmond, you had the three-headed monster at running back for the Maryland Terrapins, who did solid against the Richmond Spiders. You also look at Will Likely.
Will Likely was your hero in the first game, and all of a sudden now there were no heroes in the game against Bowling Green.
Well, Will Likely did have a punt return for 85 yards for a touchdown. Averaged two punt returns for 41 yards total, so he might have lost 3 yards or so. But nonetheless, and it's unfortunate because you look at Will Likely, who's entering his junior year as a defensive back for the Terps. You don't want this performance wasted, because this performance for Will Likely in the last 2 weeks had Heisman written all over it. And now you put that in jeopardy. You put the offense in jeopardy. And speaking of the offense, let's switch to Bowling Green's offense for a second and talk about the Terps' defense. Matt Johnson, the quarterback for Bowling Green, 36 for 55, 491 passing yards, 6 touchdowns.
Yowza.
Bowling Green's run attack, 201 rushing yards off 50 carries, averaging 4 yards a carry, 1 touchdown.
They curb stomped them.
Yeah, I mean, you think 50 carries is excessive for a running attack, but geez, they just didn't stop.
48-27 was the final score against the Maryland Terrapins, and you're looking at this game and thinking to yourself, wow, you thought that was a win on paper, but no, it was a blowout in the other side.
Yeah, and looking at Maryland's, looking at their offense, Perry Hills, 15 for 30, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Caleb Rowe entered a game. The redshirt junior Caleb Rowe entered a game, 1 for 3. And by the way, Ray, two of those incompletions were interceptions. And you want to know how to make matters worse? Caleb Rowe recently was announced as a Terps starting quarterback for week 3. How does that make sense? Can somebody explain that to me? How Perry Hills has 2 touchdowns, he's got 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Caleb Rowe, in his first 3 passing attempts this year, 2 of them were intercepted. He's a starter. That doesn't add up.
Dartboard. throwing something and hoping it works. Oh, that seems like what that's ringing to me.
Yep. And also, Perry Hills wasn't that bad in the running attack. As a matter of fact, he was the only rushing attack option that the Terps had at that point. 8 carries for 94 yards. You had Wes Brown, who had 9 carries for 53 yards. The Terps running attack averaged 6 yards a carry. Why did they get away from that? You average 6 yards a carry, and you still continue to pass the ball.
It's very simple, Josh, because they were getting beat early. They were getting beat often. They had to abandon the run and resort to the passing game, so hopefully they can get something going downfield. 6 yards a carry is nice, but eventually it's going to get stuffed if you don't have a good passing game.
Yeah, you look at their special teams, though. Brad Craddock was 2 for 2 in field goals, especially with a 41-yard long field goal. Nicholas Pritchard was also good in punting, averaging 42.2 yards per punt. Also, you look at the interceptions. You look at Jalen Brooks, who got an interception for 7 yards. And it's unfortunate because you look at this game, that being at home, I know you want to go by the Milli Vanilli adage of blame it on the rain. And it certainly was raining out there in College Park, but even so,
it was also raining for Bowling Green.
Yeah, this is a game you had to win. This is a game where you cushion up your record and get ready for a tough Big Ten season. And unfortunately, this is now going to be a Big Ten season where you're going to look at every game and say to yourself, I hope the Terps win this one because I have my doubts. Look at the Big Ten action this week. Michigan came back big and won big in their matchup. Oregon lost to Michigan State on national television. Michigan State is now considered a national title threat.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is who you're playing against here. Wisconsin curb stomped their team. Ohio State won against Hawaii in an offensive attack. These are the teams you're going to be facing against in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and two of them are prospective national title finalists, considering that they got the 4-team playoff in Michigan State and Ohio State in the same division. Oh, boy.
Yeah, so as we look ahead for the Maryland Terrapins, they are going into Week 3. It'll be a 12 o'clock game on Saturday as they face the South Florida Bulls, who are 1-1. And they are 0-1 away from home, so maybe there is that chance for the Terrapins to pick up a victory. However, though, for South Florida, they are coming off of a 34-14 loss against Florida State. First game of the season, they won 51-3. And I hate to say this, but Florida State and Maryland are two very different teams, especially when South Florida kept the score that close. So let's put it this way, Ray. Do the Terps get a win against South Florida?
Yes.
You think they right the ship even with Caleb Rowe at quarterback, which still baffles me how that happens.
Yeah, I think they'll right this ship, hopefully. If not, then you can chalk this up as another lost season and maybe Randy Etzel on the hot seat.
Oh, man, that seat getting hotter and hotter at College Park.
That it is.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Well, this has been another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Josh, what are we talking about next week?
Hopefully, we are talking about another good week for the Baltimore Orioles. Hopefully, they gain at least 2 games in the wildcard standings and keep us at least interested till the very end of September. Hopefully, they get about 5 wins this week. Of course, being in Tampa Bay for 4 road games is going to be pretty tough. Hopefully the Baltimore Ravens right the ship offensively, and hopefully they find a pass rusher in their organization that can complement the loss of Terrell Suggs.
There's a lot of hopefullys there.
Well, yeah, we are hoping and wishing and praying, and I forget how the rest of that 60s song goes.
Hoping and wishing and everything else. Yeah, so we're talking about that on next week's episode of the Baltimore Sports Free for All.
What about the Maryland Terrapins? Do they get a victory?
Yes.
They get a victory.
I said that last segment.
So we're hoping for a victorious episode of the Baltimore Sports Free for All coming up next week. And just really, really am stressing this. Ravens need a win. Orioles need another successful week. Terps certainly need a win. A lot of needs, a lot of hoping, a lot of wishing, a lot of praying. But, yeah, once again, thank you for listening to our episode.
This is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I am Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.